Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, your conference co-host. Today, I'm speaking with Shannon Myers, a trauma-trained counselor and integrative mental health professional with a Master of Science in Counseling and lived experience of complex trauma. She's also a psychedelic integration specialist and a somatic experiencing intermediate practitioner. Shannon has served tens of thousands of clients and is an expert at systems change, collaboration, innovation, and trauma-informed practices. She loves working with those who work with psychedelic users and facilitating the trauma-trained preparation and integration of psychedelics in folks with mental health histories, trauma, and those who have difficult and traumatic experiences. Shannon Myers, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I wanted to start off by talking about preparation and integration. So what is the preparation phase of planning for a psychedelic experience and why is it so important?
Oh, that's a good question. Preparation is often not thought of as part of like integration, but it's the front side of integration. And from a harm reduction and a safety standpoint, I believe it's the most important piece of obviously preparing for a psychedelic experience. A lot of times it's just considered, oh, just the experience. And all aspects of the experience are important, but the preparation, you know, if we're looking to heal mental health or looking to heal trauma, we want to make sure that it is as successful as possible, making sure that someone's not re-traumatized, that someone, their mental health symptoms aren't exacerbated. And there are so many things when I'm working with people that I'm looking for as far as like hallmarks, as far as like, are you ready? Right. So I'm like checking off boxes to make sure, because I am really, really, really big on harm reduction. And because, you know, a lot of times people come to psychedelics and they've gone through some stuff, right? Like to arrive at psychedelics, someone has gone through some stuff and they've probably tried a lot of things to heal. And maybe the trauma is pretty significant or complex. And I just want to make sure everybody's safe for their experience.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I was just talking with a research expert yesterday about safety and the principles of safety and talking through just the ways that psychedelics, as we understand them, can give people an opportunity to experience safety without anything changing in their circumstances or any of the, what happened to them changing, right? So there's like this moment of being able to feel and experience what safety feels like and remember what safety feels like. And yet in the preparation phase, you know, what indicates readiness to experience it? Because as we know, and hopefully people listening at home also have this information that there are no guarantees in a psychedelic experience. Like when I say safety, I'm talking relative, like there are no guarantee. There is no control in a psychedelic experience as far as what your actual experience is, right?
Right. Exactly. So there's no guarantee and it's all really individualized and there's typically the expectation. And so there's like this expectation versus experience. And the experience can be something that is personal. Maybe you're working through some personal things, but some of the natures of what sometimes folks are working through are intergenerational, ancestral, collective, related to the earth. Maybe they're in a group, so it could be connected to the other participants. And so it can be personal, then it can expand to the transpersonal, and which is a very expansive experience. And a lot of times folks don't have any context for that. But to your point, oh, I love that a researcher was saying maybe someone can re-experience safety, that felt sense, you know, of safety and through a psychedelic. Like how beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, that's possible.
I thought of that because what you were saying about like, you know, if somebody comes to psychedelics, it's not because that was like a whim, like, oh, it sounds fun. Like they've usually tried a lot of things before that and have heard that this might be something that can move the needle a little bit in their healing and growth or recovery. And so that aspect of, because especially if you have PTSD or CPTSD or other, you know, even traumatic brain injuries, things that accumulated over time, I think what most people who haven't experienced trauma don't understand is that felt feeling of fundamental safety or being able to touch things that make life worth living, like curiosity and exploration and fun, like these things that make our lives really rich and meaningful, aren't things that we have touch with if we've been through trauma and haven't been able to move the needle on recovery. And so that's what my limited understanding and research has shown me about the potential of psychedelics that I think is so beautiful. But at the same time, I'm really glad that we're having this conversation because there is like intention and preparation, and then all the things that are out of our control, as the old saying goes, like here are the things that are in my control, and then there's the whole bevy of things that are outside of my control, and my job is to like do something with all of those parts, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there's certainly consciousness explorers that are more apt to curiosity. And, you know, because there's different types of ways people come to psychedelics, but a lot of times it's through healing and mental health and trauma and those sorts of things. And one of the things that we actually do have within our control is doing really good preparation. Like that's something we have within our control. And we can, and I go really, really hard and deep on the preparation because we can. I mean, we can do that. And a lot of times too, it's digging into it's all the stuff that's out there. It's like it's a set and setting, and there's all of the, and I'm not going to go into that because there's so much information on that. I'm going to go into some stuff that people don't really know so much about. Is like one piece of the set and setting is like, what is your thoughts on the war on drugs? Like, how's that showing up in your system? Like, is there a part of you that is not open to this experience? Like, what has been your social conditioning around this? And what is that in your support system? Like, what are their thoughts on that too? Because oftentimes there can be some shame elements if we don't really look at, you know, what are the belief systems and the conditioning around the psychedelic experience in the healing, right? So we want to kind of journey into the belief system and to see what opportunities are there. And do you have a good idea of your trauma history and the traumas in your family, in your culture, in your society, in the collective? Because psychedelic experience are journeys, and you can go in and out depending on, you know, the dosage and the medicine of your personal, you know, the micro to the macro, right? Like you can go way, way outside of that and then, you know, come back. And we want to just have a good idea as maybe what you may encounter, especially if like the intention is around something very specific. So if it's around something very specific, I want to get to know and help you get to know what those parts are around that thing that's very specific and doing good work. Because let's say you're going into like anxiety or OCD, those are, you know, collections of parts that you may be spending timeless time, infinite, you know, maybe even a lifetime within that part. And so we want to get to intimately know that so that there is more and more, because a lot of times, you know, facilitators and therapists will say surrender, but that is to someone with trauma history to surrender. That's oftentimes, there's almost no other way to say it, but at the same time, that's a felt sense. And so we're going to have to do some pre-work perhaps around what might that feel like to be in that, to journey into that aspect of you that's maybe behind the shadows or that's, you know, that's contained. That's more repressed, and to be able to acknowledge that in the forefront and start working with that, because that's likely an aspect that may show up. And so I always am kind of getting into the work before the work because we have to in some scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you were talking, I was thinking it's like preparing for the unexpected, right? Like let's get the landscape of like who and what might show up. We won't spend too
Right.
much time anywhere, but let's just like get the lay of the land. And then the other thing, and this is an oversimplification of an analogy, but like, you know, somebody who has an anxious disposition like myself, like if I had a job interview, I would like practice driving to the location and figure out like, is there a door person and where's the best place to park? Like I would rehearse, I would talk through all the steps outside of the actual interview itself and then prepare for the interview so that on the day I wouldn't have all of these other like things coming up. And so that's, you know, obviously not equivalent to a psychedelic experience, but this, you know, thinking about and having somebody say, you know, have you considered like your relationship to psychedelic drugs and what other people's perspectives are? I mean, that alone is like, let's consider the actual treatment itself, the set and the setting, as you said, our previously conceived beliefs, our family's beliefs, our other traumas that we're carrying. I read an interesting statistic the other day about, and I don't remember the exact numbers, just that they were very, very far apart, but like 90% of people had a poor perception of psychedelic drugs, but that like 60% of people had a positive perception of psychedelic assisted therapy, right? And so it's like the context really changing people's perceptive or perception of the same thing just based on the different modality, set and setting and intention of use. And so you're right, those things can really play into a person's experience, I assume. And so how do you, and you said something earlier too about trying to protect people's mental health. And so is that what you just described part of that, or is there other, are there other things involved in helping people protect their mental health as they go on one of these experiences?
Well, there's so many things that I consider. Knowing someone's mental health and trauma history, medications, their family history, all that's really important. You really want to match the psychedelic to what someone's trying to heal. So not all psychedelics are for all people and all for all mental health states. You've got to folks have got to consider medication interactions and dosages and all. I mean, all of that is just safety 101, right? Like just any psychedelic therapist is going to be evaluating that and taking a look at that. And two, and some people there, one of the things we've got to manage is the expectations of reality. And so a lot of times someone will be on a medication for a really, really long time and they'll get off it real fast for the hope of the healing of the psychedelic experience. And sometimes it's just too fast. Sometimes it's too fast, and then and then there it's just and that's another thing is like the sense of urgency. If there's a real sense of urgency and a real rush, then we've got to really slow it down because there's a part that's trying to go real fast and there's some trauma physiology that's really activated. And we still, the tenets of good trauma work, slow and low, still apply to psychedelics. We want to make sure that it's someone is set up for success. Without if someone's been using a medication for 20 years, like we want to go a little bit slower with that. We want to make sure that some skills are in place and those types of things that are just necessary to be included. And then there's things like support and time. So that's often not considered is like, okay, so if I want to heal this trauma, do you have the time to recover and heal from that? Because trauma healing takes time. The psychedelic experience, some of that trauma physiology is going to lift, right? Like it's just going to lift and it's going to be processed. But if you've uncovered something that was outside of your conscious awareness beforehand, that's a lot to handle and to deal with. Like we have got to make sure that folks have a realistic viewpoint as to like what if what comes up is your relationship isn't working, your work isn't working, where you live isn't working. Those are big things that we have to sit with for a while before decisions are made, right? Because sometimes psychedelics are very metaphorical and symbolic and not to be taken literally. And we want to make sure someone has support, right? A lot of times when someone doesn't have the professional and personal support, they can have this transformational experience, but feel really isolated after. So some healings happen, but then not because they don't have the social context to talk about it with anyone. So there's just so many things that the preparation phase, really is looking at.
That's really interesting. Support and time is something that I think people very much overlook. And I'm so glad that you brought it up because just like if you had a major surgery or a major medical, operation or procedure, 2 to 6 weeks minimum, right, before you're doing heavy lifting literally or something like that. And so if you think about that and emotional work and somatic work and The way that your brain has been impacted by the psychedelic drugs and neural pathways and things like that forming, and that you would want to give yourself some gentle time. And this is not like I do this on, Friday and Monday I go back to my really extraordinarily stressful job, and I, where I'm doing, and then at home I've got all these roles. It's like, how can we recruit support, and space in the way that we have available to us? Yeah, it would be such a different experience.
Exactly. It's like, I mean, this is psyche and soul surgery. Like it's the same, we kind of look at it in the same way that it's going to take time. And the preparation with the psychedelic state, like you're already in the experience if you're preparing. Like stuff's already moving. Stuff is moving into your conscious awareness for you to heal. That is the nature of how our psyche and how our soul works. And so we actually don't have to rush the process. We want to, as much as possible, slow it down and enjoy it and to plan for the most successful outcomes. A psychedelic experience is often listed as the most transformational or expansive experience beyond the birth, of a child in anyone's life, right? Like we don't want to just go into it kind of willy-nilly without checking off all the boxes of safety and social support and shadow work and trauma recognition and mental health support and time and space and energy and all the things that go into really good recovery work.
Absolutely. And you mentioned shadow work, and I wanted to talk about that for a moment. For people that aren't aware of what shadow work is, what is that and why is that so important, both in, I'm assuming, the preparation and afterwards in the integration phase?
Shadow work is important, period, and it's especially important when you're in more transpersonal spaces and looking at yourself from an expansive view, because shadow work is, integrating all aspects of oneself, and especially sh the shadow is the aspects that we repress and deny of ourself and therefore the other person. So we can also project that onto other people, often in projections like, I'm not okay with this part of me, so therefore I'm not okay with that aspect of you. So there's the projected shadow, and then there's the golden shadow. The golden shadow is, you are putting somebody on a pedestal and you're projecting, hero, saver, all these archetypes on another person. And again, these things are beyond our conscious awareness. And so, like Jung said, we're making the unconscious conscious with shadow work. Viewing that you, when you are whole and you are your authentic self, you are self, capital S self, meeting another person, capital S self, and we're all interconnected with capital self, into one, into the whole. And, mystics have always said we're all just mirrors. And that's really, really, really important, because when you're in expansive states of awareness and consciousness, there are so many levels of protection and armoring that are completely unavailable or turned up times a thousand in a psychedelic experience. And the shadow is something that is collective, and it's personal too, the macro and the micro always. And it's so important to be discerning of that and to do shadow work before, because there's usually an aspect of every psychedelic experience and every trauma processing that there's some level of shadow work. There's tons of methods to do shadow work. I prefer to do it along the lines of internal family systems and parts work, and somatic work. I combine somatic experiencing and parts work, and it's called self-embodiment. And that's typically what I do. But if you don't have access to someone like me, go and Google shadow prompt questions. There's so many lists out there, and you can journal them. I have a shadow workbook here, the shadow work journal. This is, I think someone got this on Etsy. There's so many tools out there so you can get to know yourself and therefore be more compassionate member of society. Because once you've made this, all of these things, these cobwebs, if you've broken them all down inside of you, then you can more connect to another.
Absolutely. It was funny because earlier I had written, while you were talking, I had written parts question mark IFS, because I
Yeah,
was hearing all the kind of this
exactly.
Dick Schwartz language and internal family systems coming out of you. So I was curious. So that's great, because yeah. And parts work is so beautiful, especially in this kind of a context, because so many people have, you know, and we don't have to get into all the parts work jargon, but the parts of ourselves that we like cordon off and we're like, I'm not going to deal with that. That's, you know, trauma histories or even just parts of ourselves that we just don't like or that formulated during parts of our becoming who we are today that we aren't proud of or that we have shame around, right? And so to just be able to honor and allow all those parts to have a say in the giant experience that we're probably going to have and get everybody on board, if you will. Like, okay, we're doing this. Who's got concerns? Like, please come to the table and let me hear your voice. So that's great. So let's talk about mental health and kind of the precautions of psychedelic experience. Regardless of how much preparation you do, can you worsen mental health symptoms by using psychedelics?
Absolutely. Right. So with trauma, and that's my specialty, anything that can heal one person can harm another person. So just because psychedelics worked for your neighbor or your friend, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work for you. And at the same time, they can be profoundly healing if the preparation's done, because we can make a lot of assumptions and we can plan for the best outcomes. And with a really skilled practitioner, therapist, shaman, facilitator, they're going to know how to help you prepare. They're just going to know how to help you prepare. And mental health symptoms can worsen, because oftentimes what arrives is there's excitement and fear with a psychedelic experience, and typically these expansive states. And if you're working through a mental health condition, psychedelics are ex the complete opposite of everything almost in Western society, where Western society is suppression of symptoms. And psychedelics are walking you right through, not only walking through, you are embodied in that part, in that mental health. You are, and it may be, and it's timeless, you know, at higher doses of certain psychedelics, it you are in your mental health. And if someone's not prepared for that, or if the proper preparation isn't there, or there's an element that's missing, that can be a lot. And then if the integration isn't happening, and if there's not someone that's very skilled with trauma that's supporting you, or with mental health that's supporting you, and that's good at the pieces, exactly what you're working with, like a specialist in that, it may be really, really hard, because oftentimes I have everything is workable. Everything's workable within the right conditions. And that's my job, is to make sure the conditions, you know, with the preparation and the integration are there. And no matter what, because I'm preparing folks, like, we know this part, and on the other side, this part's showing up. And so we're going to work with that because it's expansive, and non-ordinary reality feels more real than reality oftentimes. And so it's this huge experience to journey into. And if the integration isn't done, and certainly there are some individuals that are naturally really, really, really good at doing their own integration, consciousness explorers, wonderful. Other individuals with trauma and mental health, if they're struggling, and they don't have a strong grasp on a lot of their tools and things like that, integration is so helpful with someone that is very, very skilled at what you're looking, you know, to master. And because without those pieces of it, they're especially in the Western world, because some of these medicines are more soulful, expansive, and they come from indigenous cultures that are more collective, that are more realizing some of the things, the interconnection of all. That can be a really, really foreign thing for like an American to encounter in their healing. When they're journeying into the interconnection of things, or if someone has a very rigid viewpoint on their worldview, because someone may go into a psychedelic experience with their like openness score as kind of, you know, maybe at 15%, and then psychedelics are this massive opening, and they in an overnight experience, they're at 85% opening. That's a huge, that's 8 hours for you to go from what, oh my goodness, I was a Christian to start out with, and now I've seen past lives, I've seen ancestral trauma. I just came here to deal with my anxiety. This is a lot, right? This is, am I supposed to be a shaman? I was seeing a symbol of a shaman. I saw an image of a Christ. And then people can take these images literally, and not knowing that there's archetypes, not knowing that your ancestral DNA is, being activated. And it can make a lot of assumptions, and that can be really dangerous, because what can happen is worsening of narcissism. Like there's an aspect of spiritual narcissism, spiritual bypassing with some expansive states of non-ordinary reality. And then there's also aspects of dissociation, depersonalization, derealization that can last for hours, days, weeks, and even up to years if proper integration and trauma support isn't provided. It's so necessary to work with the integration practitioner and on the preparation side. So then afterwards, so that if you're having some lingering effects of your psychedelic experience, so that because even though it can be transcendental, it can be your nervous system still went through all of that, and that can be just too much. And then we want to do some really good, it's beyond grounding work, but I'm going to use that word, but really some somatic trauma stabilization work, mental health stabilization work, and integration of the expansive awareness experience afterwards.
I have a lot of follow-up questions. You said a lot of
Okay.
fantastic things there, and I'm like, okay, I need to slow down and go back to a couple of things.
Okay.
So, I can imagine, and tell me if I'm off base here, but like, say you grew up and you didn't have any sort of a religious or spiritual life. Your family was either agnostic or whatnot, and you have some like big spiritual opening, awakening experience during a psychedelic experience. I could see how that would be extraordinarily, like, you would know how to do with that. You'd be like, wait, what does that mean? Right. And so is part of the, what I'm hearing you say in the integration phase is not necessarily assigning too much story and meaning to something that feels incredibly meaningful, right? Like it feels like the most meaningful experience you've ever had, but you don't necessarily have to assign a meaning to that meaningful experience.
Right, because you could have 40 years of being an atheist, and then overnight you're in Buddhist bardos, and it's like, what? And does it mean you have to become a Buddhist? This is why we want to wait. We want to do really good integration work and trauma work, and we want to just journey into what was your intention, right? Like we go back to what was your intention, what's your experience, what's the metaphor? We don't have to take things literally. And in the Western world, we often take things very literally, and our psyche and our soul speaks in metaphor, symbols, visions, sounds, stories. And on top of that, there's all this trauma processing that's happening somatically and energetically, as well at the same time. So it's going to take some a skillful integration professional to really look at that experience, and to dive into that, and to ask the body, and to sit with the person over a period of time to discover what to make of this. And that's a slower process. When we don't have to make any decisions overnight. These are ancestral healing technologies. These are we don't have to get into hustle culture and like, let's figure this out in the next 24 hours. We don't have to do that. In fact, integration, and people are not going to like this, but integration is lifelong. Integration is lifelong. So you may have a journey that you think you have the answers for in the days and weeks afterwards, and it may unfold after a year, even decades later. And so, life is long, and to become whole is to integrate all aspects of yourself into the whole. And integration is the same way. Now, do you have to go to integration sessions week after week for the rest of your life? No, you do not. However, if you're journaling that experience and you have messages and things that you are writing about, I welcome people to go back month after month to look after that year after year. And I will invite people to use different color pens and write the dates of like, oh, actually that meant that. And because the messages, the understanding of it all will change up, will and can change over time if you've really dedicated yourself to like, hey, I'm gonna recover, I'm gonna heal, I'm gonna realize my wholeness.
And that's why I think such a great integration of parts work into this is so important, as you know, is because, when you put the parts into all of these reflections, it not there's less, it matters less what was coming up, and what matters more is that you allowed it. Because I think so many of us have been taught that aspects of ourselves, whether it's our thoughts or feelings, are not acceptable, whether it was that we were taught that in our family system. And maybe that contributed to some complex trauma, or we had a terrible trauma experience acutely, and other people told us it wasn't that bad, or we had to get over it. So there's all of these parts competing for just the allowance of their actual experience and feelings. And without that, I bet with, in the integration phase, as all of these things kind of come up, it's you as if you allow them and then give them some space and time, as you're describing, then none of it has to be scary. It's just now, it's just what I'm experiencing right now, and maybe it'll pass, maybe I should pay some more attention to it later. Yeah, it just sounds like a really beautiful experience that you should take your time with. And what does a
Absolutely.
typical integration timeline look like when it's done with a therapist? I mean, obviously you said integration is lifelong, but what is a typical psychedelic experience integration period look like?
It really depends. There are a lot of therapists, they have like their how they kind of go through that, and I take it as everyone's really individual based on like what they're working through. Complex trauma, complex solutions. I have other modalities and things that I use. And, as far as besides the integration, and it just depends. Like, was this a difficult experience? If so, we're going to spend a couple sessions on integrating the difficult experience. Was this traumatic? Right? Are you experiencing dissociation, depersonalization, derealization? Like we're gonna spend some time with that. Was it transcendental? So transcendental experiences are, it's just, oh, did that even happen? Is that even possible that I can self-realize? Right? And so sometimes too, it's a follow-up and follow-through and just in checking in, because immediately after the experience, typically someone is going to know how to heal themselves, and they're going to be getting this because you're always healing yourself. The psychedelics are the catalyst. It's self-healing self always with the psychedelic. It's all coming together, and it's just following up as far as you kind of want to go to in your self-realization process, and kind of staying accountable to what came up within you, because people know. They know, well, this came up. And this came up, and this came up, and then it's going back to even their notes or the, what they remember of the experience, and like, well, where are you at with that, with your work and relationships, and how you're showing up with that? Because it depends, because individuals will have different goals and ideas and ways, and so I really wish I could give a great answer. Typically with good trauma work, within 10 to 20 sessions, which still applies to integration, right? Like there's a significant amount of improvement that someone can make towards all aspects of their life and their nervous system, rebalancing. And even just one session, if you had like a really difficult experience, just having one session with a really skilled provider that's skilled with trauma can be the difference between living with symptoms of dysregulation and trauma or not. So even just one can be profoundly helpful. So I've given no exact answers because there's no exact. I wish I had that answer, but it's also individualized.
No, I totally understand that. And that's a fair answer. And you went over a couple of terms that I want to make sure people understand because I was actually like, I'm not sure I know the difference between those. So derealization, dissociation, depersonalization. So describe to me what those might look and feel like, because I imagine there might be people at home who have had a psychedelic experience in or out of a therapeutic environment who might, once you start describing it, be like, oh gosh, I didn't know that that was what that was called, or that that had a name, and that sounds familiar to me.
Right. So they're all aspects of dissociation, and dissociation exists within a continuum. Again, I work from a trauma-trained multiple modalities and a harm reduction standpoint. So dissociation is an aspect of trauma, and I don't want to villainize it. However, if these features turn up more after psychedelics, we really want to focus on it because there is so much that we can do to heal. So I actually have these written out because I was anticipating that you asked, and I like to be precise. Okay. So derealization is a feeling that people and your surroundings are not real, like you're living in a movie or a dream. So you're feeling emotionally disconnected from people you care about as if you were separated by a glass wall. The surroundings may appear out of their usual shape and are blurry or colorless. So there's kind of like something may be bigger, or body parts, your body part may be bigger or smaller. So depersonalization is feelings that you are seeing your thoughts, feelings, or body, or parts of your body from the outside. For example, you may feel like you're floating in the air above yourself, and you may feel like a robot, or that you're not in control of what you say or how you move. And then dissociation is the feeling of being foggy. And then there's levels of dissociation, being foggy, disconnected, tired, feeling spacey, like you're on autopilot. And can be features even in levels of anxiety, there's levels of dissociation. In panic, there's levels of dissociation. Depression, there's levels of dissociation. And then you write like along the continuum of dissociation, then you get into dissociation disorders and complex trauma, which comes with levels of dissociation as well. And so, part of what someone can you really want to listen. If you're a provider and a practitioner, you really want to listen to what someone's experience. You want to get their in the preparation, like what's their baseline, right? And then after in the integration, you want to understand like where are they at now, because we're wanting to make sure that someone's nervous system in the attempt to heal isn't becoming more dissociated, more derealized, experience more derealization and more depersonalization. Because we're wanting to look for healing, to occur. There's just not enough. I'm saying these words because there's just not enough assessment for this. Not enough awareness around how to kind of check or support somebody
Yeah,
kind of
and
going
I'm
through some of that.
sorry, I mean to talk over you. Zoom is hard.
That's okay.
I'm glad that you described all of those, because I'm sure that you don't often, unless you're treating a therapist, which therapists also have psychedelic-assisted therapy and experiences with psychedelics sometimes, but unless you're treating a therapist, they don't come in to you and say, you know, I was experiencing derealization. They're not going to describe it like that. What they're going to say is, you know, an hour passed and I didn't even realize that I had been, you know, picking at my cuticles, or, you know, all of kind of like it could be emotional, it could be behavioral, it could be all kinds of things. And but they're going to tell you what happened, and then you're going to know, and you're not going to, it's not like necessarily like you're going to say, oh, well, that sounds like depersonalization. And
Exactly.
right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, you just want to listen too, because there's aspects of when someone's like, I feel like I'm in my head all the time. I'm thinking all the time. I don't feel like I have a body. I don't feel like my head and my body are connected. You really want to listen to what's going on, and you want to ask further questions, and you want to have some somatic skills. Like you want to beyond grounding. We've got to have grounding skills. Yes, that's 101 stuff, but we've got to have some somatic skills to really, really help folks. That are struggling after psychedelic experience, and it's just not being talked about enough about the levels of trauma that are happening, the levels of dissociation that can sometimes happen too. And it's important, and these things can heal.
Absolutely. All right. So, what are your hopes for psychedelics in the future?
I have so many hopes. I have all the hopes, and I call them holding my intentions for humanity. There are a lot of barriers right now, and there's a lot of things that, in my viewpoint, are kind of off track, which therefore means there's a lot of opportunity, and I have a lot of hope. So my hopes are that anyone that wants to access psychedelics in any kind of way is able to, whether that is in the medical model through psychedelic-assisted therapy or in any other way. So I'm a big supporter of the decriminalization movement, but I'm also a supporter of religious freedoms, and there's so much. Psychedelics never went away; they went underground. And Indigenous communities are well equipped, and I don't know why Indigenous communities in the underground hasn't been invited to the table, because they have the best. These individuals are so skilled and can help us so much, and they're not brought to the table. I kind of envision everyone at the table, including insurance funders, including grants, including psychedelic users, drug users, peers, communities, therapists, doctors, the funders, the legislation, everyone at the table, because we need everyone at the table, because it's so siloed right now, and it's almost inaccessible for folks, and it's getting to be very medicalized, which is okay, because that is a way that some will interact with psychedelics. But there's also going to be this counterculture movement. There always has been. And if there's a way for those folks to be grandfathered in, or to validate safety and protocols, like, I'd love to see that. We are in an epic trauma crisis. Childhood trauma is the biggest public health crisis known to man, and so is trauma. The war on drugs has been a war on trauma, has been a war on people. And we're in multiple crises that are converging: depression, suicide, mental health, trauma, despair, loneliness, isolation. We're about to see a lot of people laid off with AI and automation. People are so disconnected from the rhythm of life, just from being their authentic self. And I'm holding out hope for humanity that we can get it a little bit better this time, because it wasn't just decades ago that things kind of got off track. This has happened in the 1500s and 1600s in South America. And I hope we can learn from our past mistakes. Some of these psychedelics are sacred sacraments, right? And everyone should be allowed to explore their consciousness in their divinity. Now, obviously, it's not for everyone, but just like, if we don't decriminalize, we lose access to education and safety, because just like we have, because psilocybin is safer than alcohol. Yeah, alcohol, right? Like, if you're over 21, you're allowed to drink, and we have a lot of programs and education around safe drinking and all of that. That would be the same if we did that here. And we have models to follow. We've got the models in Portugal, and yet we only use mental health and trauma as talking points, and there's not really these systems in place, because all of these individuals' traumas are coming from systems traumas, and the systems are disconnected. They're not linked together. And fundamentally, we need to have some of the weavers. And I am asking anyone listening to that is excited about becoming involved in any aspect of psychedelic healing, to please do that, whether it's policy, whether I'm becoming a counselor, a therapist, or advocating, working with insurance funders, asking everybody really to step up, because it's so important. People are not okay. And so I'm holding out hope. I really am. I'm holding out hope and intentions for our highest timeline of humanity, that these medicines, my goodness, like a right to try for people at the end of life, and even just for people curious to explore. Psychedelics, if anyone's read The Immortality Key, predates Christianity. Like, psychedelics have been part of religious and sacred rites of passage since the beginning. And I hope that these barriers are removed. I hope that there's more collaboration across systems. It's very siloed. It's so very siloed, and it's so inaccessible. It's almost inaccessible for someone to become an integration professional just to the cost, right, of it. And for someone to spend to be asked to spend several thousand dollars to heal their trauma, like, what are we doing here? Why are we trying to profit off someone's trauma? Why aren't all vets given access, like right after they come back from deployment? Why are there so many barriers? I don't get it, because we are not okay. And I hope that some of these insurance providers will allow individuals to actually have true informed consent, meaning don't push something on somebody and tell them what they should be doing for their mental health. If they're cultural, if they're religious, if their spirituality is saying, you know what, I'm going to try psychedelics before I'm going to try this other thing to heal my trauma, to heal my mental health. A lot of times some of these protocols require folks to like fail out of all everything, and so they're re-traumatizing folks across trying to heal, and okay, you've tried it all and now this is approved. That is so inhumane to someone. I mean, they're just trying to get through life. That is so inhumane. And the cost, my goodness, the costs are, and even to the therapist, there's no, I don't know of a code right now for individuals to actually, when MDMA come, I hope that there's a code for like the length of time that someone needs and the integration and the group work and all of the things. And then I hope that because we've decriminalized, because I'm holding this intention, that folks can do the individual work and do the collective work and do the community work, because it's both. And we cannot be so westernized when we're using ancient technology that's indigenous technology and go with it with this mindset of individualism, right? So we heal together. We heal together. So it's both. And I hope that, I call myself the integrative counselor because I'm trying to fill in the gaps between all the systems where people fall in between. And I am a fan of any single path that someone heals. And I'm going to root for every single way that it is possible someone walks all the way home. That's what I'm here for. And I am not going to play this competition game. I'm not going to create these barriers. In fact, I'm going to put my head down and I'm going to lean into gap collaboration, and I'm going to do play my little part so that collective liberation happens, hopefully, in this lifetime.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about the concept that you were saying about the weavers, because everything is so siloed right now. And because of that, there are, some safety issues and some places where people have been taking advantage of people. And without the weavers in place across all of these different systems, right? Though that's the system that will help prevent further abuse or further traumatizing, or, we have to be able to share information across both traditions and systems, right?
Absolutely. There are so many protocols that festivals have in place that are incredible and should be woven in. And Indigenous and shamanic practitioners, they've been doing it for thousands and thousands of years, and these are oral traditions passed down. How are they not included? How I don't me having a background both indigenous and a colonizer within myself, there's often like this, like, what's going on? I don't understand why we're not including this indigenous science, why we're not including the festival science. Like, all of this is evidence-based. It really is. And there's so many things that have been figured out for safety and consciousness healing already. And I mean, I hope everyone can get at the table, and I hope that more weavers come on board to help, because we can build bridges, right? Like, we don't have to rip apart everything. We can build bridges, and I'm hopeful for that.
Absolutely. Well, on that hopeful note, Shannon, how can people find out more about you as the integrative counselor?
Yeah, so I'm on most of the social media websites. My website, the Integrative Counselor, and Instagram, Facebook, and Threads, and YouTube as the Integrative Counselor. I think it's I don't do Twitter anymore, but there's I'm there as well. I am not on TikTok. I don't know. I'm in my
We
40s
can't be everywhere,
and
Shannon. It's
I
okay to
can't
have
be
limits.
everywhere. I'm not on there, but I'm on the other places, and that's where you may find me.
And that's actually where I found you. I found you on Threads. So thank you for being there because I would not have made your acquaintance without it. Shannon Myers, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.